content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Hello, this is Jen Andrew from North Carolina Reading Service. I'm the Communications Coordinator for Disability Rights North Carolina. For the next half hour, I'll be discussing psychiatric residential treatment facilities, or PRTFs, with my colleagues Holly Stiles and Kashona Mims. Kashona, let's start with you. Tell us about your role at Disability Rights North Carolina and your background, and then we'll move to Holly.
So I'm currently the supervising investigator for the investigations and monitoring team. We go out to all counties in North Carolina, and we monitor in all the facilities where people with disabilities are served, and we also conduct investigations into abuse, neglect, and exploitation.
I'm Holly Stiles. I'm the Assistant Legal Director for Litigation. I've been with Disability Rights North Carolina since about 2009 and have worked on a variety of issues, but currently I'm focused on our litigation efforts, which includes court cases, but also participating as friends of the court in other people's cases and consulting on policy and other issues that affect people with disabilities across the state.
Thank you both. I'm going to ask a few questions now. First, can you describe what a psychiatric residential treatment facility, or PRTF, is and what its purpose is for our audience who may not be familiar with the term?
A PRTF is a psychiatric residential treatment facility. It provides care for children and adolescents who have mental illness or substance abuse or dependency, and it is in a non-acute inpatient setting, so it's a residential facility, but it's not considered a hospital.
Thank you. Can you let us know, what are the conditions like in some of these facilities?
Well, PRTFs are identified as therapeutic environments, but they are just the opposite of therapeutic environments. Over the past 6 years of me being physically in these facilities, I have not witnessed any type of trauma-informed care approach when addressing these children or staff engagement with these children. I see a lot of very thin mattresses for these children to have to sleep on that are similar to what you see in prison settings. The rooms are bare bones. The walls are... It all looks institutionalized, and they have very little resources to make their rooms look personalized. Sometimes they will draw something from a coloring book and try to put it on their wall to spruce up their space. And even then, sometimes they will be forced to remove that. Some of the facilities are not temperature controlled in the winter or the summer. The children are not receiving the nourishment that they probably were receiving out in the community when they were living at home. A lot of children are hungry. Food is cold, undercooked, hair was in their food, spoiled milk. The conditions are not as great as they are presented on paper or in the brochures or online. The lobby is beautiful, but once you go to the back where the children are being served, it looks different, and it is very different from what is being presented to the community about these types of settings.
Kashona, could you talk a little bit about what is trauma-informed care? What did that look like?
Well, trauma-informed care is when you take an approach where we all have trauma. For example, I witnessed 9/11 from my window at work, a plane crashing into a building. And that trauma stayed with me for a very, very long time, and I have had to go to therapy. So you don't want to trigger someone when you're communicating with them, so you take an approach that you consider what they may have experienced in their life. It could be feelings, it could be smell, it could be the way you speak, your tone. All of those things play into the trauma-informed care approach. I typically do not ever ask a person to repeat to me an experience of abuse, because I want to make sure I'm taking a trauma-informed approach. So I will read everybody's write-up about it, but the person who was abused, I will not have them retell their story. That's a part of me taking a trauma-informed care approach.
Thank you so much, and thank you for the work you're doing. What does research tell us about the outcomes for children with disabilities confined to PRTFs compared to non-institutionalized children, and why does DRNC advocate for community resources and home placements?
Well, in a nutshell, North Carolina as a state does not prioritize community-based treatment. Instead, North Carolina spends hundreds of dollars per child per day on places such as PRTF placement. And many of these children are in crisis because they couldn't get the behavioral services that they needed in their homes or even in the community. These children are removed from their families and from their communities, and that in itself has proven to be traumatizing for these children. And a disproportionate number of these children are people of color or in the child welfare system, a foster care system, or they're living in poverty. So they may be sent to a PRTF across the state, really far from their families, or even in a different state, which leaves them without real natural support. And it makes a huge gap between the connections that they could have with their families. And also, they get no real support when they're in these types of settings. PRTFs are also physically and mentally dangerous for children, emotionally dangerous and traumatic for children. These kids receive little to no actual treatment through what I have witnessed in my monitoring. They get a lot of group therapy, quote unquote, but it's not therapy. Sometimes it's kids telling the whole group of how another kid has not done good in some things, and they get to vote on if this child should move to the next level. It's this weird level system, and these children shouldn't be so informed about another child's treatment in that way, because then it creates a situation where if somebody has a really high level and someone does not, now jealousy comes into play and kids want to be combative toward each other. So it's not a very therapeutic environment. Also, we advocate that keeping children in their homes with their families and the right supports and services, it slows the cyclical hospitalization. Children typically will do and get better, and it keeps families together, and the cost is much less. It costs a lot of money per day per child in these types of settings. You don't see it in the services that they are receiving, but there's a lot of money being spent per day. Also, studies show that children have a better outcome at a lower cost when receiving services in the community. Yet, North Carolina is still not prioritizing less costly, more effective community-based treatment when evidence shows that institutionalization is causing irreparable harm to these children. So that's a part of why we advocate to have children placed in community-based services where they can have a home life and receive treatment.
That makes a lot of sense. Thank you so much.
One of the things that is so surprising to me, because Kishona's been monitoring these facilities for years, and I've been in them more recently, is how similar to what you think a juvenile justice facility would look like, these places look, how similarly they seem to be run to an incarceral setting, down to, you know, the idea that you get points granted and taken away, depending on all sorts of different factors. And so it seems like it's more focused on controlling behavior as opposed to treating behaviors. And why are they having those behaviors?
Thank you. DRNC recently joined a lawsuit. Could you give us a little bit of background on that case and what led to the decision to move forward with it?
Yes. So Disability Rights North Carolina, in conjunction with a nonprofit firm in New York called Children's Rights, in conjunction with the North Carolina chapter of the NAACP, and a private firm in Charlotte, Moore and Van Allen, acting as pro bono counsel, brought a lawsuit in early December of 2022 that is focused on the use of psychiatric residential treatment facilities, PRTFs, to warehouse children in the foster care system. So When you look at the demographics, more than half of the children in these facilities are typically in foster care. They are typically placed at the facility for months and months at a time when they're meant to be used for short-term episodes, short-term stays. The service definition talks about 90 days. We rarely see a 90-day stay in a PRTF. And sometimes we see not just months, but sometimes years that children are spending in these facilities. And again, they're a incarceral type of setting in terms of how the children experience them. So children who have committed no crimes or not there for a crime are being treated as if they have, in fact, done something wrong and they're not necessarily getting treatment. So the lawsuit came about after years and years of Kishona's monitoring and after one of our other attorneys on staff, Janu Nolcoast, had been also studying the issue. She was a legal fellow, had a sponsored legal fellowship, and spent 2 years just studying the issues in PRTFs. There was a series of newspaper articles by USA Today, and yet nothing changed. Nothing at all changed. The Department of Health and Human Services, which is the funder of this service and is the overseer of child welfare services in North Carolina, gave a lot of lip service to the things that needed to happen to fix these problems. They've acknowledged that there's widespread problems, and yet nothing has changed. So enough was enough.
Makes sense. Thank you so much. It sounds like these are really difficult circumstances. How did you both get involved in this work?
Well, I've always done public service work. That is my life's work. I have worked in sex crimes against children 11 and up and 10 and under. I also conducted child abuse investigations during that time in New York. It's called Administration for Children's Services and Special Victims Detectives. I also did investigations with the Department of Education in New York. So I've always worked in this type of realm. And so it was just a natural fit when I saw that the PNA was hiring. And I applied for this job, and it has been an experience that it's heavy work, but it is necessary work, and I love being of service.
Thank you. Thank you for your work. How about you, Holly? What led you here?
I fell into it. I'm sorry. I don't have a deep and inspiring drive to apply for the job, but then once I did, obviously it was where I was meant to be, and so I very much enjoy what I'm doing. I've been doing it since 2009, so clearly it's something that makes me feel very satisfied, and I'm glad that I, again, just sort of applied for a job. It wasn't that I was applying for my dream job, but ended up being exactly where I was supposed to be.
Excellent. Thank you. Is there anything else you want our audience to know? Is there any piece of information you want to leave them with? So what would you like our audience members to know about PRTFs?
Well, I would like them to know that PRTFs are pretty much jail-like settings for children that are hidden in plain sight because they're all over the state and all the counties. And when I drive to them, I see how they are in the community but pushed back in the cut where nobody can really see them. So they're being hidden in plain sight. And, you know, behind closed doors, they don't know that these children are being excessively put into physical restraints. They're given chemical restraints, which children refer to, and I quote, as booty juice. They are then not able to, you know, function and be awake and alert and communicate as they typically would without that chemical restraint. Sometimes they receive broken bones as a result of the physical restraint. There have been bruises, stitches, swollen eyes that I have seen for myself as a result of these restraints and excessive seclusion. I mean, 24 hours in a seclusion room, sleeping there. And that is not something that has been ordered by a doctor. It is just what staff chooses to do. And I have filed a ton of complaints with the Division of Health Service Regulations, DHSR, and they have substantiated much of what I report to them. And sometimes they unsubstantiate things I have seen, even if I send photos or something from the facility directly that corroborates my story. And I don't understand how they have continued to allow these places to operate as they have been when they see what I see. And children are being harmed. And I know you can check their website and look up these facilities if you want to check them out and see where they are and how many children they serve. And you can also look up their surveys to see what the state has cited for these facilities. Some of them will have huge violations and some will have little deficiencies. And then they have to do what's called a plan of correction. And they're supposed to fix things within a certain amount of time. And the state is supposed to go back and see if they have. And a lot of times it's just a cycle of, you know, slap on the wrist, repeat offender, repeat offender. But in the meantime, children's lives are being harmed. And so that is what I would like people to know. And I don't know if these surveys are accessible to everyone. You know, but I do know that they do have them online for people to look them up. And if they're not accessible to everyone, that's another thing that needs to be addressed with the state, because they should be accessible to all people.
And for individuals who are interested in finding the survey that Kishona is talking about, and when we talk about a survey, it's a written report of what DHSR sees when they go into a facility. And then what they've recorded, the law requires, and then whether or not that particular facility is meeting those legal requirements. And then, as Kishona talked about, the plans of correction, how they're going to come into compliance with the law. We link to those surveys on our website, which is www.disabilityrightsnc.org. And again, that's www.disabilityrightsnc.org. Rights, plural, R-I-G-H-T-S-N, as in North Carolina, C.org. And if you search on our website for PRTF, it will take you to the pages of our website that include all the information we're discussing, including the lawsuit we filed, including past reports, a link to all the surveys. It's got a lot of information about what we've seen year after year that's going on in these facilities. And I think what Kishona is talking about is this oversight agency. You know, these problems are documented, and yet they're allowed to continue. So that's just sort of a hard pill for us to swallow at Disability Rights North Carolina.
Thank you both. That sounds really frustrating and really troubling. In light of what you've seen and witnessed and the frustration of things not meaningfully changing, my question is, what gives each of you hope as you continue to do this work? What keeps y'all going?
Well, I love this work, so that's what keeps me going. Even though it's heavy work, it's traumatic for me to bear witness to a lot of what I see. I want to pile children in my car and take them somewhere to be safe, but I know I can't do that. However, we do have some glimpses of light, you know, some wins. We were finally able to get a huge article in USA Today for people to read and see what's going on in these facilities. It was titled Inhumane, North Carolina Kids Locked Away. And the title alone was very drawing for me because, you know, I started visualizing some of the stuff that I see that is inhumane in these facilities. And these are children who did not commit any crimes. The only thing is that their brain is wired differently. So these behaviors that are being manifested is because of their brain being wired differently. So they're being punished for that, not treated for that. So that article gave me hope because I knew it went far and wide. I know a lot of people were able to read that and like finally get the word out of what's happening with children in North Carolina. And then the news of an Observer also did an article in December of 2021, and seeing that gave me hope. And it was about PRTFs, and one was being shut down. And that does give me hope because now I know that this is one less facility where a child is going to have a broken bone, be, you know, secluded, be bullied and not protected, because that goes on a lot too. Children are bullied and they're not protected from that. They just have to take it. Also, what gives me hope is when a former resident of a PRTF, who, for example, might have aged out, calls me randomly, telling me an update on their life. And despite all the trauma that they've experienced, these kids are so resilient that they still manage to muster something within themselves to move forward and get a job and, you know, go back to school and do well under really horrendous circumstances that they've had to face. And so that really gives me hope. And when they tell me, oh, you're one adult that I trusted and you did help me, and when nobody else was helping me, because I don't even think about my work that way. So that's a reminder that okay, I'm doing something good here. So that was what gives me hope. And this lawsuit gives me hope.
Thank you.
Well, speaking of the lawsuit, that is, so my day-to-day work is litigation. And so that is obviously where I draw some sorts of satisfaction that, you know, there's a legal system that can examine what's going on and pass judgment on whether or not those things are in compliance with the law. But even more so, when we file a lawsuit, we typically issue press releases. And when we issue a press release, the folks that start contacting us to say that these are issues they are also confronting, or these are things that, you know, a family member has experienced, you know, you realize you're doing the right thing. That it's a legal process, but it's validating what these people have experienced.
Thank you. Thank you both. I can really hear the passion from both of you, and it's hard work, but obviously really necessary. So thank you for giving us a snapshot of what's going on and what is on the horizon, and we certainly hope that things move forward in a positive direction for these kids. If you would like to learn a little bit more, again, you can visit our website at www.disabilityrightsnc.org. Thank you for listening today.
So, Jen, why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. I'm Jen Andrew. I'm the communications coordinator here at Disability Rights North Carolina. I manage our social media channels. I help edit reports for our website. I write a newsletter. And I kind of wrangle all of the communications for the organization. So I have a unique perspective. I get to see the incredible work from all of our teams, and I get to see how it impacts the disability landscape as a whole in North Carolina. It's super important work to me. I do live with a disability, so it impacts me personally, and it's really important for me to help in any way I can advance disability rights in North Carolina. So I feel really honored to do this work.
So you're fairly new to the organization. You might have already given away some of the answer here, but what made you accept a job and come work with Disability Rights North Carolina?
I have worked in different areas of advocacy for many years, and the through line that I noticed was that each organization was working on a piece of the quilt of social justice and advocacy, and I didn't land in many spaces where disability was considered and certainly not centered, and I felt very strongly about bringing that conversation together, because I think disability, you know, affects everything, and also, you know, my lived experience was such that I wanted to bring my own experience and observation to this work, and I've been really grateful to land here.
So, has there been anything that has just really surprised you? Something that was unexpected?
That's a good question. I think it was surprising how many people are still unaware of things that seem obvious to me. I mean, we all, you know, operate from our own perspective, but, you know, it's both a challenge and a privilege to have the opportunity to educate and advocate.
Well, thank you for sharing a little bit about yourself, Jen. We appreciate it, and welcome to the Disability Rights North Carolina family.
Thank you both. It was a pleasure to talk to you all today. We've run out of time for today's episode of Legal Matters. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jen Andrew, reading for North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.